It's good to see you. It's good to be here on this beautiful morning. It was really interesting. We're down to one car at the minute, and so it meant I had to drive Nigel across to Sunnybank, around that area, to pick up somebody to go back to Kingswood Academy so that he could then start setting up with the rest of the team the tech stuff for this morning. So I did that and I dropped him off, and it was just a beautiful morning and the sun was shining, and then out of nowhere it started to rain. Did anybody see that? It was incredible. And I was just like, okay, God, what is this? And then I'd rounded the corner, and there in front of me was this incredible full rainbow. So I got really excited. So I just thought I'd tell you that. It's nothing to do with what I'm speaking on this morning. It's just really lovely to be with you. It is like being a little bit like home from home, really. I have been spending quite a bit of time with the guys in the worship team, and they've been working really, really hard and pushing, you know, boundaries and trying new things. And, you know, it's always a little bit scary when we try new things, but sometimes that's what we need to do, just to push through into the new of God. And just pray for them, because they're just doing amazing things. And you know, your worship team is quite vulnerable at times because of the very nature of what they do. The enemy doesn't like what they do, and so he will try and undermine and, you know, bring attack and that kind of thing. So they really do need your prayers. You know, it's a bit like, you know, when there's a war and they send in the RAF first to drop the bombs so that the ground troops can go in. And, you know, the worship team is a little bit like your Air Force. They're going ahead and preparing the way, sort of thing. So just really keep them in your prayers. So if you want to turn with me to Joshua chapter 3, verse 2. And we're going to start at verse 2 and go through to 14. It's called Crossing the Jordan. It says, early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the Levitical priest carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and the ark. Do not go near it. Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things amongst you. Joshua said to the priest, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. So Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. So I've called it this morning, preparing to cross your Jordan. And just picture the scene there as we've just read about it. The Israelites have made the final part of the journey. They are determined to be the ones who would be obedient and not blow it the way that their ancestors had. So excitement and expectation was high. But then they come to this river and thinking they're just going to, you know, just go straight across with ease. And it's running really high and really powerful. And they're all like, oh, this is amazing. It's just about to happen. You know, we've held on to all that we dreamed for, and it's about to come to pass. And, oh, it seems like it was forever, but here we are. We're going to cross the Jordan straight into the land of milk and honey. And then they stand there on the banks, and it looks impossible. Sound familiar? And off they go to stand there and to try and figure out. But God speaks very clearly to Joshua. You know, God has called you. He's promised you. He's prophesied over you. He's sung over you. He's spoken over you. He's given you a dream. He's shown you a vision. And it all looks like it's going forward, but then you hit an obstacle. And now you're left wondering, how are you going to overcome it? Does that sound familiar to some people? But you know, you and I are like Joshua and Caleb. God has promised that he will finish what he started, that we will enter in. Joshua and Caleb were given the keys to the promised land because they had a different attitude to everybody else. You and I have been given the keys because of what Jesus did and how his attitude was so different and his life was so different to everybody else that ever lived. But there are certain principles that we need to just take a few minutes to look at as we look about crossing into our promised land. So the first one is the principle of the presence. They followed the presence of God. It says in verse 4, "Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and the ark. Do not go near it." The priest had said to the people, when you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord, your God, carried by the Levitical priests, break camp and follow. You know, we've got to be a people that can follow the presence of God and respond to the presence of God at all times. And I'm not just talking about in a church building. I'm talking about every second of our lives. There might be a situation where God is just going to speak to you and say, "Will you just go over and pray for that lady over there? Will you just go and share about my gospel to that man over there?" We've got to be expectant that God wants to use us in every area of our lives. Sometimes when we mean break camp, it means that we have to leave things behind. We have to leave something behind in order to enter into the new. Matthew 9:17 says, "Neither do men pour new wine into old wineskins. If they do, the skins will burst. The wine will spill and the wineskins will be ruined. Instead, they pour new wine into new wineskins and both are preserved." You know, I get this sense right now that God is expanding everybody. You speak to people and people just feeling the stretching that's going on, you know, whether it be corporately in whatever church they're in or personally. God's really just expanding and stretching people because he wants to pour into you that which can't be contained in the old way. You know, Helen Keller writes, "When one door of happiness closes, another opens. But often we look so long at the closed door that we do not see the one which has opened for us." And to follow means that we must look forward and not back. And it's just so easy, you know, just like the Israelites did, didn't they? Their forefathers, the ones that didn't actually make it into the promised land. You know, they were so excited. You know what it's like when God speaks to you about something new and fresh, and we can get so excited about it. But as time goes on and hope deferred can make the heart a little bit sick. And then we start looking back at how it used to be. And well, it was better when we were in Egypt because at least we could eat this and we, you know, we had everything that we needed. And that's the time when our trust and our trust has to really kick in. And the place to increase that trust is to be in the presence of God, is to get before God, to get in his presence, to worship him and to allow him to show us and to lead us and to refresh us. So how do we handle the presence of God? There's a clear instruction in the second part of verse 4. It says, "Keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and the ark. Do not go near it." It's amazing to think that years later, David, we know the story, put it on a cart, you know, just didn't treat it with the dignity and the honor that it deserved. When we can get too familiar with the presence of God, we can overlook the significance. You know, the ark wasn't just a piece of furniture. It was beautifully crafted and it had a specific role to play, but it was a dwelling place. It brought supernatural favor and provision. And that's what the presence of God does. It's a dwelling place where we can find our direction, where we can hear God speaking, saying, "This is the way, walk in it." It's a place of favor and provision that as we get into God's presence, he gives us strategies and direction. Think of Obed-Edom when they'd taken the ark and they put it on a cart and it had been touched and he was, you know, smitten, wasn't he? Smited, is that the word? Smitten? No, it's not smitten, is it? That's when you love somebody. No, it wasn't that. But anyway, he was killed, basically. And they left the ark with Obed-Edom. And of course, we know that from that day on, his life was incredibly blessed because the presence of God was residing in his home. And so he was incredibly blessed while ever the ark rested at his house. You know, I don't think that was in any way because he was God's favorite. I just think it was because he was really willing to host the presence of God. How willing are we to host the presence of God? Let's give the presence and the glory of God the honor and the reverence that he deserves. It's not something that we can take a selfie of with a mobile phone. And now, you know, we see that. You know, we see it. Oh, God really moved this morning. You know, and then people are there, you know. And I'm thinking, do you know what? When I read the account of God moving in the temple, when the cloud filled the temple, it says that the priests were on their faces. It didn't say they were stood there. Well, they weren't texting the mates, were they? Because they didn't have mobile phones. But do you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, how well do we handle the presence of God? How have we got so familiar with God's presence, God's glory, that we actually can just stand and take a photograph of it or put it on Facebook or Twitter or whatever? Don't get me wrong, you know, when you've seen something incredible, I've done it myself, and when you've seen, you want to share it with people. But when the true glory of God falls, we ain't going to be standing there taking photos on our mobile phones. We're going to be on our faces. And I think God just, you know, we're in a season where I feel like God is just really stretching us in all of these things, and he's taking back his glory. He's taking back his honor. I feel like there's an aligning going on right now that God is working in us to make sure that we are in perfect rhythm with him at the front. God is jealous for us, and relationship means more to him than any gift, any office, or any calling. So the second principle is the principle of consecration. Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves because the Lord will do wonders amongst you tomorrow. The Hebrew word for consecrate means to prepare, to dedicate, to be hallowed, to be holy, to be separate or set apart. God was telling his people that if they were going to cross the uncrossable and follow the will of the Lord, they must be set apart for him. They must be holy. We are made righteous by the blood of Jesus, but there will be a pruning season where God will strip away those things that get in the way of our relationship with him. It's just part of the rhythm of our walk with God. There will be seasons where God will strip things away because he wants to get to the heart of the matter again. I think I'm really sensing that we're in a season again where God is just taking us back to our first love. Has anybody else been feeling that? Nobody? Just me then. Well, must be me then. Maybe I'm preaching to myself. But you know, again, it's just so easy to get caught up in what we do and our roles and titles. And God is just saying, you know, I'm so much more interested in relationship than I am about what you do. But notice, before God does the wonders, there is a call for consecration. Consecrate yourselves because the Lord will do wonders amongst you tomorrow. I feel like that's a prophetic word. Consecrate ourselves. I'm not saying that it's going to be tomorrow in our calendar, but there is a sense that we need to restore, bring back our passion. Restore the first love. Go back to that place where we were when we first met him, how passionate we were, how we couldn't wait to get into his presence, how we couldn't wait to pray, and wherever he was, we wanted to be. There's an awakening taking place and an awakening to this first love. And we're going to have some time at the end where we can just take some time and just do a little bit of business with God, because at the end of the day, we know our hearts and he knows our hearts, and it doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks. The third principle is to step out and stand still. The Lord said to Joshua, "Today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And as for you, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant. When you come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. This was the moment of truth, the final act of obedience before the crossing over. There was no struggle. They obeyed and there was an ease. It was so different to their forefathers who had just been so stubborn and done their own thing. The ark was held right there in the middle of the river. You know, that tells me that God is always willing to be in the midst of the obstacle and the challenges that we're facing. Again, it's also a prophetic statement that God went into the river first, that he was leading the way for this generation of Israelites to follow, a far cry from the previous generation. There comes a time when we have to take a step. We have to get our feet wet. They could consecrate themselves all they wanted. They could be obedient all they wanted, but it was the stepping into that brought the miracle. Faith has feet, faith moves, but it also says that they stood. And you know, that wouldn't have been easy if you think about it, because that river was really high and it was really full, it was really powerful, and they stepped into the river. And you'd think to yourself, wow, they're going to step in and then it's all going to be amazing and we're just going to go straight through. But actually, they had to stand. There was that time where they had to stand and wait for the promise of God to come to pass, i.e. when you stand in the water, the river's going to stop flowing, and it did. Sometimes when God calls us to step out, we think it's going to be amazing, we think it's all going to happen, and we're just going to, you know, we're going to go and do what God's called us to do. But actually, sometimes we step out, but then sometimes we just have to stand. You know, 12 months ago, God said to me, I want you to quit your job, and I want you to step out into ministry. And, you know, I've had a dream in my heart to be used by God for years. Some of you have known me for a long time and will know that. And so I was obedient to God. And it was scary because, you know, we were going down from two incomes to one income. But I stepped out and I was really, really excited. And I was like, oh, this is going to be amazing, you know. And nothing happened. Nothing happened, you know. I had time on my hands, and so I enjoyed sort of, you know, having that time and praying and studying and all those things that you want to do when you don't have the time. But nothing happened, and at first it was like, it's okay, it's fine. This is preparation time. I know God's just getting me ready for all of these amazing things that He's got for me. It's going to be fine. But as the months went on, it wasn't fine because the bank balance was going down. You know, things weren't particularly, there was a few bits and pieces coming in, but then you start to doubt, have I really heard God right? Maybe it was just me wanting to fulfill my fleshly desires of been doing the things that I wanted to do. But you know, sometimes it's like a seed falling to the ground. Sometimes when God calls us to step into the new and to step into our promised land, sometimes it seems like we're waiting on the mountain for the ram to appear for the sacrifice. It's like building an ark when it's never rained before. But God promises that He'll always be with us, that He'll never leave us and forsake us, that He goes before us and He prepares the way. So how do we stand? Well, Ephesians 6 tells us, finally, be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. Therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand. So after we've done everything, after we've prayed, after we've prophesied, after we've studied, after we've begged God, whatever it is that you find yourself waiting on right now, God says, just stand. Because if I've made a promise, you believe that I'm going to fulfill that promise. When the priests got into the water, all they had was a promise from God, but it was enough for them. And as they stood in the water on that promise, the waters parted on the word. Just as it did for Moses, when Moses stood at the Red Sea and God said, lift your staff. And he lifted his staff. Sometimes God will ask us to do things that just don't make any sense at all. Like, earlier this year, my friend Lynn, she's been struggling for quite a number of years with fibromyalgia. And she came to our Connect group one this particular morning. And she was so in so much pain. She had to get someone to drive her. She couldn't even drive. And, you know, everything was just like really not in a good place. And she said, I very nearly didn't come this morning, but I just wanted to be here. And so at the end, we prayed for her. And God gave me this picture of Moses at the Red Sea. And he said, tell Lynn to lift up her walking stick like a staff. And so she lifted it up. And when I said to her about it, she's like, oh, I don't really do things like this. It's a bit weird, you know. But I was like, well, Lynn, this is what I feel God's saying. It's entirely up to you. And she did. And she lifted it up. And I remember praying for her. And I remember thinking, man, she's holding that walking stick up there a long time for somebody with fibromyalgia. She's like, just, you know. And so I was like, what's going on, Lynn? She's like, I can feel this heat in my body. And my body's really tingling. And so I'm like, okay, so what does that mean? And she's like, I'm healed. And God healed her then and there on the spot. And she has never looked back. But you know, even then, even when God did that, I text her in the afternoon. And because all the time I'm thinking, I wonder if she's still healed. I wonder if she's still healed. So I text her in the afternoon and I said, how you doing, Lynn? So she's like, yeah, I'm doing really well. Because I got him to drop me off at the top of my road and I walked all the way down my road and I've never done that before. And then I went in and I made lunch and I didn't have to rest. And I said to her, I bet the devil's telling you, are you still healed? Are you still healed? And it's like, it was me. It was saying that to not her. And she's like, well, he is. And I'm like, well, you just need to tell him. You need to kick him into touch. I'm thinking, who are you talking to? Are you talking to yourself? Are you talking to her? But do you know what? She has never looked back. And it's just amazing to see. She's just taken on. She's just got a job. She started a little business. You know, her family. Because, you know, when that happens, it's not just the person that's sick that is robbed. Her kids were robbed of their mom. Her teenage daughter, you know, had a mom who hadn't got the energy to put two sentences together some days. And so that whole family has been completely impacted. Her neighbours are like, what's going on with you? Everybody's talking about it everywhere she goes. Her physio put on her notes, healed by prayer. Do you know? God will sometimes just ask you to do something. When he asked Moses to raise his staff over the Red Sea, you know, they've got, you know, the Egyptians barreling down behind them with their chariots ready to take them out. And God's like, yeah, just stand at the Red Sea and hold up your staff. I don't think I'd have been particularly cool in that situation. But, you know, it all comes down to attitude. If we look at Numbers 14:24, it says, because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went to and his descendants will inherit it. Last Monday morning, I dropped Nige off at Dolby Forest Visitor Centre. And he hiked off to a campsite where he was scheduled to stay for 4 days. And he had everything that he needed in his backpack. I think the backpack was nearly as big as he was. It had a tent. It had a mattress. Well, a pad. A sleeping bag. He had food. He had a little tiny stove. And he had coffee. I put coffee in capital letters because that's really important to Nigel, if you know him. But his food was like this freeze-dried stuff. Yeah, exactly. But you'd think that was impressive enough until I tell you that this was part of his training for an adventure. He's planning on going next summer to the farthest northern beach in Scotland, where you have to hike about 6 miles to get in there. And when you get there, there's nothing, just sand dunes and sea. So if you need the loo, you have to dig a hole. I've renamed him Bear. But, you know, if you're like me and you're not a camper, this might sound a little bit crazy. I mean, you know, give me a warm bed over and food over any of that stuff. But the real impressive thing about this is that my Nige is actually 63. He's going to be 64 next year. And people are usually gearing up to buy a caravan, aren't they, or a mobile home. You know, they're not really thinking about hiking up moors and, you know, but that's what he's doing. I've told him that when he's doing that, I'm going to the spa. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with that, okay? Most people wouldn't do what he's doing because they probably just wouldn't believe that they could do it. But, you know, age is an attitude. And as I was driving him up there, that's what God said to me. He said, you know, Angie, age, it's not about a number. It's about an attitude. And you can be 16, 15 and have an attitude, I can't do it. Or you can be in your 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 100s with an attitude that you can do it. Muriel Shelbourne was a lady that was, some of you will know, that was based in Lincoln. And she was just amazing. She was one lady. You know, there's always somebody that you wish you'd known more of in your life. And I wished I'd had an opportunity to really spend some time with that lady. But from little bits that I knew about her, you know, she, from, you know, till the she took her last breath, she was just living life to the full. You know, she was just raising up generations. She was speaking into people's lives. And, you know, I look at her and I think, that's the kind of woman that I want to be. You know, when I leave this earth, you know, I want to just leave it doing things for God. I don't want to leave it, you know, just, yeah. I carry me out. Let me be leading worship or something. But, yeah. But the first thing we see about Caleb and later on in Joshua is that they had a different spirit. It was that different spirit that enabled Caleb and Joshua to bring back a different report to the other 10 spies. So what made them different? Well, they had a conquering spirit. They were courageous. They were ready and willing to fight for their inheritance. It says that Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." That was his attitude, and the other ones were like, "Oh, we can't go in there. Oh, they're far bigger than we are. We're just, you know, plebs in their eyes. They'll take us out." But they had a positive outlook. They focused on the possibilities of what they could overcome against what they couldn't. In other words, their glass was half full. They'd spied out the land and they came back. And interestingly, it says they tore their clothes. And I was like, why did they tear their clothes? Why did they come back and tear their clothes? It's one of those little lines that just gets thrown in there. But I think it's because they were so believing of this promise that they tore their garments in process at the others' lack of faith and almost blasphemy of God in saying he couldn't get them into the land. God had promised to get them into the land, and then they came back and said, it's not going to happen. It leads me to ask the question, where are those that are so passionate that we're willing to stand up and speak out at the blasphemy of our nation that says there is no God? Your God can't do what he says he can do. Where are those in our church? And that's not about a young generation coming through. But where are those? It's time for the church to arise and to show that we are the head. You know, we spend a lot of time declaring it in prayer meetings, but we don't always get out there and show it. And I'm not talking about running for parliament or, you know, being the local mayor. I'm talking about with your friends, with your family. You know, Lynn got healed. It's very evident to all of her neighbours that don't believe in Jesus that she is the head and not the tail. It's very evident that God has elevated, that she's been healed, and that she's carrying the glory. They had faith. They never forgot the promise of God. They said, if the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. How much are we believing in the promise of God for our lives? They understood and had experienced the presence of God. Like we said earlier, we need to be a people that follow. They saw it. What do you see in this season? Caleb served the Lord wholeheartedly. An attitude or a spirit such as theirs, it was a really important quality. We can never measure success or can be gained without wholeheartedness. You know, God tells us, doesn't he, about what he'll do if we're lukewarm. Again, it comes back to this time of consecration, of God stretching us, of God bringing us back to the passion, of God relighting the fire, or, you know, blowing on the fire and setting us on fire, as it were, and turning up the heat. He's looking for a people that will serve him wholeheartedly. Because of their different spirit and their full service to God, Joshua and Caleb not only survived 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, but they received their inheritance in the promised land. And the spirit of Joshua and Caleb was never negative. They weren't fearful of their enemies. They didn't speak negatively and transfer the spirit of fear to the people of Israel. Instead, they spoke with confidence and tried to encourage others not to fear, but to believe they could make it with God's help. What an attitude. How good are we at that with each other? Are we people that are calling the gold out of each other? Are we people that are saying, come on, you can do this? Each generation to another, encouraging not just the older generation to the younger generation, but the younger generation saying to the older generation, because that's usually what happens. It's usually the older generation that is saying to the younger, come on, stand on my shoulders. But actually, I want to say to the older generation, God's not finished with us yet. He's not done yet. The Bible says that, you know, our days, our latter days will be greater than our former days. God's not done. It's not finished. The final part of God's word to Moses was that he would make sure that Caleb and Joshua saw and inherited the promised land. I want to say this morning that there is an inheritance with your name on it. Does that not excite you? There is an inheritance with your name on it. What is your promised land that you're waiting to possess? What is it? Is it a specific ministry that God has called you into? Are you holding on for a prodigal? Are you praying for unsaved friends and family? Maybe it's a specific financial situation that God's promised to bless you with. A particular need. Are you praying for revival? Is that your promise? Mike, I know your promise is revival. God's spoken to you. He said that you'll see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. That's what he said. What do you see? Because what you see will translate into what you speak. So what do you see? Do you see revival? Do you see your prodigals coming home? Do you see your neighbors finding Jesus? Do you see your bank account moving from debt into provision? And I'm not talking about prosperity. I'm talking about provision and being blessed to be a blessing. Do you see that? Is your cup half empty or is it half full? Because when we see through the eyes of God, then we'll start to proclaim and declare through the eyes of God. And I want to say to you today that today is a day where we can draw a line in the sand and actually start to speak the language of heaven instead of the language of earth. God has got a plan. God has got an inheritance from the oldest to the youngest. Age is irrelevant. Age is an attitude. And the message and the question today is, are we willing and are we ready to receive what God's got for us? I want us just to take a few minutes. I don't want to do ministry because I really feel like we need to focus on the kingdom. You know, God's been really speaking to me a lot about the kingdom versus the church. And it's not versus, but, you know, with the church. The church is this. The church is that. But the kingdom, we get so caught up in church. We get so caught up in titles. We get caught up in roles. We get caught up in all of that stuff. And actually, your biggest platform in your life is your world. It's the school gate. It's your job. It's the school. It's the university. It's your world. That's your greatest platform. But we get so caught up in this bit here, like it's the holy ground or something. You know? And God's really been speaking to me about that. About how the next move of God is going to be a movement of people like you and me. It's not going to be about some evangelist on a platform that everybody flocks from around the world to see, because God can only move in that place. When this move of God comes, it will be a worldwide movement. You will not need to leave England to go to America or wherever it's happening, because it will be happening everywhere. And you will be the ones that will be causing it and being used by God to bring about salvation into people's lives. You won't need a platform like this. So what I want us to do is, John, if you could maybe just come back and tickle the ivories, that would be great. I'd like us to pray together, just to pray around, rather than come to the front and one or two people pray for you. If this is about a movement of people, then it's about us doing this together. What do you need? Do you need to reconsecrate your life? Is that what you need to do? Do you need help just believing the promise that God's got on your life? Do you need help getting into the presence? What do you need to do this morning? Do you need to step out? Or have you stepped out and maybe you just need to stand still and be still and know that He is God? So if you just want to find someone to pray with and let's just find someone to pray with. I know this is different probably to what you're used to, but God's doing a new thing.